Hey everyone, I'm Brooke.
And I'm Adria.
And this is What Have You Done?
Cue the music.
Yeah, I know. Do you even remember what it sounds like?
Not at all.
I know. I was like, when we decided we were going to go back into this, I was like, should I go back and listen to an episode? Should I even check the last time we did this? And I didn't do either of those, so.
Yeah. I tried to listen to one of them, and I couldn't. I, like, had a hard time listening to myself.
Did you, when you listened to them, when we recorded them forever ago, was it painful for you to listen to?
Not so much. It wasn't that bad. For some reason, listening back a year later, it was like, ugh.
That's fair. Well, I feel like, not that we've done anything podcasty in between then, but I feel like that's just like the cringe, your first episode you listen to, you're like, yikes. But joke's on us, because we probably sound exactly the same.
Right. Or hopefully not. I don't know. It's like looking back at, like, MySpace posts from 10 years ago or something like that. And like, oh, God.
Yeah. No, I feel why? That. Hopefully we're coming back strong.
Right.
But we got Pennsylvania for today, which was my pick.
Pennsylvania.
Not going in order, because I, once again, like chaos.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You're a, what is it? Have you heard how they split things up? I don't know who they is, but there's either the chaotic good, the chaotic neutral, or the chaotic evil. Have you heard that before?
I have never heard that before.
Oh, okay. So I think there's different, like, personality types, and I think I've taken like some test on it before, and it came out like a chaotic neutral, which I'm not sure what they all mean, but I don't know. Now I'm just talking about something I don't even know. When you said chaos, it reminded me of like how there's different kinds of chaos.
That's fair.
I like a more controlled chaos.
Yeah.
Well, that's not true.
Well, it's probably what you prefer. It doesn't mean it happens.
Right. That's a good point. That's
you
true.
Have zero control over the chaos in your life. It just gets just gets slapped in the face with it.
Mm-hmm. What made you pick Pennsylvania?
Honestly, I was just looking through some headlines to pick one, and I found one from there, and I was like, oh, okay. And I figured that would be a fairly easy one to fight a case on, so. And it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I just rolled with it.
The only thing I really know about Pennsylvania is I know that, aside from historical stuff, Hershey Park is there, so you can go.
Yeah, we took a trip
to the
there
Chocolate World.
With the work crew forever ago. I wasn't even 21 when I went, so I couldn't even drink while we were there. And we didn't go to Hershey Park, so. And I was sick, so it was great.
Yeah, I remember hearing you guys you were sick.
Yeah, and then I think I got everybody sick after that, but other than that, I have not been to Pennsylvania and have no experience with it. It makes me think of, like, this is based off of absolutely nothing, but I can't imagine it's too different from New Hampshire. It's not a ton to do here either.
Oh, yeah, I could see that. There's a lot of mountains and scenery and things like that, so I could see that. New Hampshire-esque. Yeah. No lobster, though.
I love lobster. We've been watching Hell's Kitchen. Have you ever watched that?
Yes. I haven't watched it recently. I definitely used to watch it back in the day.
We went back.
Lobster risotto.
Oh my god. So we went, and we just finished season 17. I just started like randomly in the middle. We just started season 18. But all I do while I watch that is just crave all the good food. And
yeah,
the lobster risotto looks so good.
it does look good in their scallops that they make.
I know. All right. Scallops aren't even my favorite, but, like, they look bomb there.
Ugh. They do. They just opened a Hell's Kitchen in Connecticut at Foxwoods.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that because that's, like, the closest one. I would definitely go. Mm-hmm. My friend's dad went to the one that they filmed the show at, which I think is in L.A., and she said it's more just, like, the experience, but they spent $700 that night for four people.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's insane, but... I don't know, if I had $700 to spend on that, I would do it.
Yeah, I guess.
Just because, I don't know. I just want really good food. When's the last time you've been to a real nice restaurant? I don't know if I'd, like, ever have been.
Very long time ago. Like, that's true. I don't know if I really have been either. I know we went to Vegas a while ago, and I remember we went to somewhere really nice that we got dressed up for. Don't remember anything about it. Probably spent a ton of money.
Or because you just don't remember?
I think I just don't remember.
That's fair.
Because honestly, the first night we were in Las Vegas, we went crazy, and I was very sick the next day. And I think that I pretty much... I drank over the next few days that we were there, but it was not, like, the first day, because I did not want that to happen again. It was bad.
I don't know if I can handle Vegas. I don't know. That sounds like so much work, and I like to go to bed, and I like to sit on my couch, so.
Yeah. Well, the good thing about that is there's a lot to do that doesn't involve drinking, too, so...
That's fair.
You can go to shows and stuff.
Yeah, I could definitely go there and watch shows and eat lobster risotto.
Watch people.
Yeah, yeah.
Anywho, do you have you must have a news story for us, right?
Yes. Alrighty.
What you got?
So my news article title is, "Man Getting Vasectomy When Earthquake Hit Thought the Doctor Was Making a Joke."
Oh, no.
He's shaken, but not spermed.
Is that in the news headline?
It was, yeah.
Oh, my God.
That would have been cool if I came up with that, but I didn't.
I know.
So, yeah, it was a 33-year-old man named Justin from Horsham, Pennsylvania. I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, but he was having a vasectomy when an earthquake with a magnitude of 4.8 hit. I don't really know earthquakes, so I don't know how big that is or not.
I don't think it's huge, but it's enough that you feel like a little rumble.
You'd feel it, yeah. So I guess he posted on X, which is Twitter, a fucking earthquake happened in the middle of my vasectomy. So I guess about 10 minutes into the 20-minute procedure, the whole room started to shake. He first thought it was something like a train station nearby that would cause the shaking. But he didn't think it was an earthquake. But then the doctor went, "Is that an earthquake?" He thought the doctor was joking, but he was not. And
oh my gosh.
What would you think in that moment besides looking at, well, are you conscious? You must be, because if he's thinking, he's conscious.
Yes.
But
yeah.
Just looking at your doctor and being like, "Are you fucking kidding me? Like, don't do that. Don't make that joke."
You both probably just hold as still as possible in that moment.
Nobody breathed. But everything turned out okay. His procedure went fine. They paused. Never, after everything settled, they finished the procedure and he was totally fine. But I just think that's something that would happen to you.
Oh, for sure.
Like, how could this possibly go wrong? Oh, there was an earthquake hit and there was a little extra snip that wasn't supposed to happen.
Make sure it's extra cut off.
You're right.
Nothing's getting through. Ugh.
I thought that was funny. There's a picture of the guy standing outside the sign with like a big smile on his face and like a thumbs up. This was a good sport. Could you imagine some of the men that would like lose their mind?
Yeah.
Thinking something went wrong or like, but thankfully this Justin guy seemed to take it quite well, and everything went well, so.
Good old Justin.
Alrighty, are you ready to move on to the Pennsylvania case I picked?
Yes. Let's hear it.
Went back and did what I usually do. And I did, I covered a missing person's story from there.
Mm.
Alright, so Courtney Stouffer disappeared from Palmyra, Pennsylvania in the early morning of July 29th, 2012 from her apartment she shared with her boyfriend, Bradley Hare. She was 20 when she started dating Brad and he was 19. She was 21 at the time of her disappearance. She's 5'8" tall, has green eyes, blonde hair with dreads, and 3 tattoos. Her parents described her as a very outgoing and confident girl. She was on the debate team and very headstrong. She could put on a dress and compete in talent shows or go out and play in the mud, go fishing. She was down for any type of activity. And then kind of like you said, they live in a very like farm type area, so.
Right.
She liked to be the center of attention. She was the oldest girl out of 6 siblings. And she had a black lab named Sheba, who she loved very much.
Aww.
So she ended up working in a beauty salon like her mom, but then ended up turning that around and doing dog grooming, which until I got into this case more, I didn't even, I was into the story a ways before I found that. And I was like, oh, that's ironic.
Yeah, that's cool.
But yeah, so I guess she loved that way more than dealing with people, which is fair.
Same.
Right. I guess her boss there had a lot of good things to say about her and said she was an amazing worker. She worked super hard. And she just had nothing bad to say about her. I think she was very reliable. She handled the animals well. So around this time when she got into, like, the dog grooming and, you know, was growing up a little bit is when she began to be seen more as, like, a hippie, free-willed person. And I think she kind of chilled out a little bit more and, you know, just went along that way.
Right.
So she disappeared after a long night that began and ended at her own apartment. There were a lot of people, fights, and arguments in between when the get-together began at Courtney and her boyfriend's apartment the day before, July 28, 2012, and when Courtney and a friend ended up back at her apartment very early morning of the 29th.
Okay.
The first noise complaint came from Courtney's neighbors on the night of the 28th. So they had had some friends over. I think Courtney was 21, but her boyfriend wasn't. And I think there was just underage drinking happening, and they were just being loud. So the police came, searched the home, and they found alcohol. This resulted in Courtney's boyfriend getting arrested because he was on probation for underage drinking already. So obviously he wasn't supposed to be drinking, so they arrested him. I believe, and I think Courtney believed, most of the motive from the neighbors calling was to get Brad arrested because they knew he was on probation, so I think they knew that would happen. And again, the two had never had a good relationship with their neighbors. I think they had neighbors below them that they didn't get along with, and I believe there was one like across the street or something that also didn't like them. So from the very start of the night, Courtney was not happy, obviously, because her boyfriend just got arrested. So after the commotion at her apartment settled down, Courtney texted 2 friends and went out and joined them in another couple, starting at gas station, starting at gas station, which is a bar where they first all met up. So it's Courtney, her 2 friends, and then a couple.
Okay.
The Courtney's friends are Cody Pruitt and Milton Rodriguez.
So, one second. The noise complaint came before they even went out? Like, it was the beginning of the night?
Yeah, so the night started with people coming over to their apartment. Okay. Not these people, though. These people weren't there. It was just, I don't know, I didn't specify. I think it was just other people, and they were just being loud.
Yeah, she met them at gas station.
Yeah, so she texted, after, like, I think all that shit went down at the apartment, she texted these 2 friends to meet up with.
Okay.
Her parents shared that they weren't sure why she had reached out to Cody after all this went down. Her father stated that he didn't even know Cody and Courtney were friends, So it seems a little weird that, like, of all friends, she reached out to them because it didn't seem like they were that close. So from gas station, everyone got into Milton's car to head to a different bar called Hardware Bar in Harrisburg.
So there's gas station and hardware bar.
I know, right? I know.
Okay.
So it's thought she drank pretty heavily and was pretty intoxicated because she was so upset about what happened to Brad. I think she just kept drinking and kind of had the little, like, fuck it attitude about the night. So when they were at the hardware bar, she began fighting with the girlfriend who was part of the couple that came. Because she believed that this girl's boyfriend had broken into her home at some point and had stolen money from her. So that, to me, just sounds like some drunk fight that just, you know, somebody starts yelling and then everybody's freaking out. But the fight ended up being so loud and disruptive that security came over and they asked Courtney to leave. And I guess her friends didn't come outside with her and left her out there by herself. But Courtney ended up texting Cody and Milton to take her home.
Okay.
So a little before 3 a.m. on July 29th, so this is the next day, this is the day Courtney does go missing, Cody, Milton, and the couple finally get back to Milton's car, and Cody is driving Milton's car. I don't know why. So they drop the couple off, then Milton then went back and got Courtney's car. That was had been left at gas station. So again, so Cody is driving Milton's car, drops Milton off back at Milton's house, and continues driving Milton's car to bring Courtney back to get her car, and then Cody followed Courtney back to Courtney's apartment. He claimed that he knew she was intoxicated and followed her to make sure she was safe and got home safe.
Right.
So, Courtney's dad said that Cody had always had a crush on his daughter, but Courtney never felt that way towards him. That was just, like, a small little noted thing.
Okay.
Okay, so after everybody's dropped off, so it's a little after 3 a.m. at this point, the two get back to Courtney's apartment, where she began fighting with her neighbors again, who she saw outside. She believed that they were the neighbors who called the police and resulted in being in Brad being arrested. There was always tension between the neighbors, and again, she's drunk, so I think she was really just going off. Right. So the police were called again. They showed up and could tell everybody was intoxicated and try to just defuse the situation and tell everyone, just go to bed. And they said if they're called out one more time, that somebody would be arrested this time. So I guess somebody else would be arrested this time.
And Cody is not there for that?
He is, yeah, so he stays. He stays with her.
Okay. Okay, he stays there. All right.
Everyone did go back into their apartments, but a little bit later, on 4 a.m., there was more noise coming from Courtney's. I guess the neighbors said they heard loud banging and yelling and stomping on the floor, and the police were called again. So police respond for the third time that night to Courtney's apartment, but by this time, which wasn't much later than the phone call, everything seemed quiet. Police knocked on the door, no one answered. So they left. And didn't make sure everything was good, but it was quiet, so they just left. And Courtney's dad said he thinks this is weird that they went from next time we come here, someone's getting arrested, to just walking away to the door, from the door. That was unanswered. So the next morning, which is really just a few hours later, because that was about 4 a.m. So I guess the next morning was the annual Lebanon Country Fair, which Courtney had always attended every year from when she was little. Her parents knew something was wrong when they didn't see her there. She also hadn't been answering her mom's phone calls, which was unlike her. The next morning, Monday, so I think she disappeared Saturday night. Sunday was the fair, where they couldn't get a hold of her and she didn't show up. And now the next morning after that, so Monday, Courtney's mom called around to see if anybody had heard from or seen Courtney, and they hadn't. Her mom went over to Courtney's apartment right away. Courtney's car was in the driveway. When her mom went inside, she was greeted by Sheba, Courtney's dog. The dog had gone to the bathroom inside, which never happened, so clearly it had been a while. The TV and the AC were both on. Courtney's keys, shoes, purse, and cell phone were all inside her apartment. And everybody really knew something was wrong when she left her dog behind.
Right, yeah.
So Courtney's dad was now there and had begun looking through her phone, trying to reach out to anyone she had had contact with shortly before she disappeared. Most recent texts were with Cody, and that was who she was seemingly last with in her apartment. Cody is telling her dad that he had gone inside with Courtney the night everything happened to calm her down because she was still so upset about everything that had happened with Brad and her neighbors. That was after the cops had last come, but not the time where the door wasn't answered. And right. Cody said that after that, they had shut the lights off, went to sleep, and he had no idea what happened to Courtney. She was just gone the next morning. When he woke up, he said he called out a couple times saying he was leaving, didn't get a response, but he just left.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, Monday afternoon, Courtney's parents had called police, and they were told to come the next day and file a missing persons report, which is exactly what they did. Which sucks, because now it's Tuesday.
Yeah, you know? The next day.
I know. Right, it's not even like she disappeared that day, and they were telling her to wait till the following day. But so the police called in help from the Lebanon, I don't know, county district attorney's office, because they had more resources to help with more complex cases. So police went out to Courtney's apartment, where they declared it a crime scene. There were several forensic searches, but they weren't able to find anything alluding to foul play or that gave them any idea as to where Courtney was. Police spoke with the downstairs neighbors and didn't get anywhere from that. The last thing the neighbors heard was the stomping and yelling that they had called the police about, but they went to bed when everything got quiet and also assumed that it was just over.
Right.
So the police went and spoke to the next door neighbor, a 44-year-old man. to the next door neighbor, a 44-year-old man next, who both of Courtney's parents claimed was acting strange the whole time. He wouldn't look them in the eye, talk to them or anything. All they really got out of him was, nope, didn't hear anything, nope, didn't see anything. So a few weeks before the incident, Courtney's mom said Courtney had called her and said that this next door neighbor had a video camera out and was recording her. I guess she was just standing on the porch at the time. Her mom pretty much just told her to go inside, don't interact with him, but the neighbor denied that that ever happened. This neighbor had left a voicemail, which the police were talking to him about, for Courtney's landlady the night she disappeared, and was very angry and complaining about all the noise and that he wanted Courtney out of there. Courtney's mom said the neighbor had said in the message if the landlady didn't take care of her, that he would.
Oh. And is that the same guy he told the cops he didn't hear anything, right? At first?
Yeah. So I guess, so he's not talking about that night. This is like shit that had previously gone down.
Gotcha.
So again, obviously the threat that they had on voicemail about taking care of Courtney if the landlady didn't is not good. So both of Courtney's parents said that while they were waiting at the apartment for their daughter to come home, that the suspicious neighbor had come in and out of his home at least 6 times. Courtney's mom said he'd bring a couple trash bags out to his car, leave for a little bit, come back, and repeat. But police searched his apartment, car, trash, and never found anything incriminating. So, police move on to Courtney's friends next. Cody was still telling the same stories before. They went inside, went to bed, then she was gone in the morning. He had texted her a few times that morning when he realized she wasn't there. He went out to a convenience store as well, which was confirmed with camera footage. Courtney's dad contacted Milton as well and said that all his answers were very vague and he simply just didn't know anything. The vehicles and homes of both Cody and Milton were searched and nothing was found. Police did learn some new information that night on the argument Courtney had had with the couple at the bar. They now were hearing that it was about Courtney thinking that person had broken into her house previously or had somebody break into her house. And the person she got into an argument with that she was thinking broke into her house was a known drug dealer. So I think that's where, you know, something sketchy plays in with the drugs, money.
Yeah.
So Courtney's parents knew that she smoked weed, but they didn't think she was using any other type of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Police spoke to the spoke to the man Courtney had argued with in the bar, and he said he didn't know anything, and he had an alibi for that night. No major leads have come up or anything until March of 2014, when a woman came forward and contacted Courtney's parents about something she had overheard. This woman, whose name is Amanda, claimed Courtney was killed by two acquaintances over money and drugs. She believed Courtney's body had been wrapped in a carpet and thrown into Memorial Lake. Police were hesitant to believe this and were skeptical that she was in the lake. Her parents had the lake searched just in case. This lake was 12 miles away from where Courtney was last seen. Ultimately, nothing was found. Police did end up staying on top of this case and made sure everyone involved was thoroughly interviewed and looked into. In 2015, Courtney's parents hired their own private investigator to hopefully get somewhere with the case and find something new, but there really just hasn't been any major leads or clues to what happened. Courtney had a lot of love around her, family and community-wise. Her family hasn't stopped looking for her. If you have any information about Courtney's disappearance, you can contact the Lebanon County District Attorney at 717-228-4403. There's also a Facebook group dedicated to Courtney called Courtney Stover Remember Me, in case anyone wants to check that out. But that's really all there is on this. There's nothing has come out. Nobody said anything. Wow. They searched her house. Nothing was out of place. There was no blood. There was no fingerprints. There was no broken, windows. The door wasn't kicked in. It's crazy that in just a few hours, regardless of who it was or what happened, that nothing was disturbed. And, her car was there. Her phone. So it's like, I don't, like, all right. I can think of is maybe she, went out for a walk. I don't know, to cool off, whatever, maybe to go see if the neighbors were still outside, to yell at them more, and, somebody took her, something happened that way, because, I feel like they have a couple things, set up that are, maybe, but, again, the fact that nothing is disturbed, or Cody didn't hear anything, supposedly, is really strange.
That's the weird thing. Yeah, because if there was enough noise for there to be a noise complaint again, at 4 a.m. in the morning, and he didn't hear anything from it, and then she's just gone. Pretty odd.
If she pissed off the people that she thought had broken into her house and they came, he would hear that.
Yeah.
The neighbors would hear that if they're so, nosy about every sound they're making. You would have thought the neighbors would have heard something, or even the last bit of, stomping, yelling they heard. You would think that if it was, distressful screams or something, you would have thought they'd say, they would have said that.
Right.
And then everything got quiet. I don't know. I just feel like it would have been. But it's what could Cody have been doing if he was, if he hit her with something, there'd be evidence of something. Something would have blood on it. Something would be moved. It's just odd that in a couple hours, she's just gone, left everything.
Yeah.
And nobody has any idea.
So at first I was thinking maybe she got, a call from someone and was arguing with someone on the phone and then went outside to, confront them. Maybe they pulled up outside and they put her in the car, but I'm sure they could pull up phone records at that point because it was, 2012, right?
Yeah, and her dad was going through her phone and the last person she had talked to and texted was Cody.
Hmm. I don't know. It doesn't look great for Cody. But, I don't know, you would think if it was Cody, something would have broken by now. The fact that no one's saying anything, I wonder if it was drug-related.
Yeah, right, and they just don't have the right person, because again, everything's been searched for the most part. You would have thought they'd find something, and this isn't that long ago, to be well, they might have missed something.
Huh. Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
These ones get me, because it's just, I would just love to know what happened.
How old she is? How old did you say she was?
When she disappeared, she was 21. And that was in 2012.
Okay, yeah, so she was super young. Oh, man.
Well, yep.
Hopefully something comes of that in the future.
Yeah, no, I know. That's why, I like telling these two, because it doesn't hurt to get the information out in more ways.
Right. Exactly.
Alrighty, what kind of Pennsylvania story do you have for us?
Well, I had a little bit of a hard time finding stuff. Obviously, there's some well-known stuff, but I did find a story about a man named Harvey Miguel Robinson. And this is kind of a brutal story. So just trigger warning in the beginning, like I'm going to mention rape and kind of brutal stuff. So just to put that out there before. Also, there's a small part about a child being involved in that kind of stuff. So just to warn you ahead of time. It's not a nice dude. Yeah. So a little background on him. He is actually known as one of the youngest serial killers in American history, being as his first charge was when he was 17 at the time of his first killing. He's from Allentown, Pennsylvania. Robinson was born December 6, 1974 in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Not much is known about his mother. His father... Excuse me. I like burped and coughed at the same time. Sorry.
Nice.
I'm going to take a drink, actually. So, not a lot's mentioned about his mom, but his dad, who he looked really highly up to, was not a nice guy. He was pretty abusive. The mother ended up leaving the family due to the father's abuse pretty early on in Harvey's life.
Yikes. So that's deep-rooted.
Yes. Yeah. So he grew up with that in his life. In 1963, his father was actually convicted of voluntary manslaughter after beating his mistress to death with a blunt object. Yeah. The detective said his mistress was named Marlene Perez. She was only 27. The detective said that she was nearly unrecognizable when she was found. His father was actually 32 when that happened. So he was kind of young as well. And he got sentenced to 12 years in state prison with that.
And that's the first offense we know of from the father.
From the father, yes.
Okay.
So Harvey, following in his father's footsteps, he was actually arrested for the first time in his life when he was 9. Wow. He was arrested for shoplifting. And then he ended up getting arrested a couple other times before the age of 17 for threats and outbursts against his teachers. He ended up getting expelled from school. It just sounded like from the beginning he wasn't set up for success.
Yeah.
It seems.
Well, and especially if his mother left too, you know, like maybe she was decent but couldn't take it. And if he lost that potential decent role model and was just left with his dad, then.
Yeah, it's sad. Over a period of 2 to 3 years, Harvey actually raped and killed 3 women near Allentown, Pennsylvania. Police suspected his involvement in several others, possibly totaling 6 victims. He was linked to other murders by DNA evidence and convicted of them in 1994. Psychiatrists believed that because he had a violent role model as a father, that he'd understandably relieved his stress with violence. They did think that psychiatrists made note that they did not believe that Harvey was able to overcome his violent impulses and didn't think it was just immature mistakes. He was likely a cold-blooded killer and returning again and again to ensure his targeted victims were dead.
Yikes.
Yeah. Just a disturbing guy. His first known victim was named Joan Burghardt. She was a 29-year-old nurse's aide. She was raped and bludgeoned in her East Allentown home in around August 1992. She was discovered in her apartment. Wait, did I write this correctly? So, I wrote... I'm just going to go check really quick. I didn't write it correctly. Okay. So in my notes that they found her a year later, so that's not it. So in 1993, Robinson spotted his first victim, Joan Burghardt, by witnessing her undressing before bed in her apartment window. After a neighbor called to complain about Burghardt leaving her stereo on for 3 days and three nights, police discovered the 29-year-old's body brutally murdered in her own home. He appeared to get through her bedroom screen that was missing. Police immediately tried searching for the killer, not knowing that he was already in custody for a completely unrelated burglary charge. So he slipped under the radar and was back on the streets within a month.
That's crazy.
Yeah. While he was out, he encountered a 15-year-old newspaper carrier named Charlotte Schmoyer. On the morning of June 9th, people began scanning the streets when they woke up and didn't find any newspapers on their doorstep. One client found Schmoyer's cart abandoned next to her bike later that day. Which is so sad. You think of all the... Yeah.
This little bike turned over with the wheel spinning still.
Oh. I know.
Did it say how old she was? Yeah.
15.
Oh, okay. And do you know how old he is at this point?
He is 18 at this point. So okay, he's actually not that much older than her. Yeah. So soon enough, the residents called police who found her radio headset dropped between two houses, along with enough finger streaks on window panes of a nearby garage that hinted at a struggle. So It sounds like she was definitely, it was intense.
And that's just like a random house she was at?
Yes. Yeah, it was like outside on her route. Yeah, it's the search party did not take long to find blood and a shoe, and finally the battered body of Schmoyer that was stuffed under a stack of logs. Autopsy report would go on to say that she had been stabbed at least 22 times and was sexually assaulted repeatedly with her throat slashed. So it was pretty big overkill.
And he didn't know her, right?
No, he didn't know any of his people.
Very, very that he went after. Guy.
The whole time I was reading this, I was just thinking to myself, like, I can't imagine this just running around your neighborhood, and you have no idea. All of his victims were just all different ages. Like, it didn't matter.
And your last thing you're gonna think is it's a 17-year-old kid too.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. You would think it was someone older. And these are all within, days of each other. His third victim was a 47-year-old named Jessica Fortney, who he strangled to death. And that was 3 weeks after the 15-year-old Charlotte. The saddest one, after stalking a woman for 5 days, Robinson actually broke into her home, where he unfortunately encountered her 5-year-old daughter before he got to her and ended up sexually assaulting her and choking her, the 5-year-old. She actually survived. Wow. He thought that she wasn't alive anymore, but she did make it. And he did go into the bedroom of the mother, but her boyfriend was over at the time and he decided not to go through with it because he didn't want to encounter a second person.
Damn. So, I mean, this guy has no limits if he did that to a little kid. I feel like usually you hear something, whether it's like, they'll brutally murder an adult, but they'll be like, oh, I would never harm a child, or like, I would never hurt the dog, But this guy seems like he's just red-eyed friendly.
Yeah. Yes. That's exactly what it is. It's just like a frenzy out for blood. I don't know.
Very, very angry.
Mm-hmm. So he finally got caught. A woman by the name of Denise Calley escaped from his initial attack that he put on her. And when she reported it to police, they got her to agree to use her as bait for him. So a few nights later, he returned to her home, presumably to finish off what he started. And police officers were there to intercept him. He broke through a window and eventually got into a shootout with the police, but they ended up apprehending him alive and unharmed. He did have to go to the hospital for some wounds, but nothing was wrong with him. He, at his trial, he didn't show any signs of remorse or explanation for anything that he did. He just kind of seemed indifferent to it, which is so scary that there are people out there like that.
I know.
It's just really disturbing. I think that that's why I ended up picking this one, because it was just like, oh man, there's just no reason for any of this.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Right. You don't really see stuff like that. That literally, like, I mean, to me, that just screams he's just been so, so angry. And obviously, like, growing up, he dealt with his dad being like that. And I'm sure he, you know, beat the shit out of him plenty of time. You know what I mean? Like, it's just.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's sad that it ended up that way, and like that he's that damaged and that angry to, you know, do this to other people.
Right. So finally, in November of 1994, Robinson was sentenced to death for his crimes. So
was that your stomach?
Didn't last. No, that was my dog.
No.
Oh my god, can you imagine if that was my stomach? No.
That's what I was like, I need to ask, because if it is, that's hilarious.
No, that was Mosby moaning and groaning in the background. Or was I? Oh, so his conviction actually didn't last for long, because in 2006, so that's 11 years from his conviction, Pennsylvania passed a law saying that minors cannot be sentenced to execution. And he was 17 at the time of his first crime, which he received the death penalty for. So he got resentenced to life imprisonment. He pretty much cut a deal saying he would waive his appeal rights in order to exchange it for life sentence. So he's pretty much saying he accepts that he's going to be in jail for the rest of his life. So, but then in December 2013, the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania upheld his death penalty in one of his later murders of Fortney. October 2019, Pennsylvania judge resentenced Robinson to 35 years to life in prison after he successfully appealed the death penalty conviction. So not the one that he settled for life in prison, but the death penalty one.
Hmm.
The judge in his case closed the court case by telling him that he should consider donating his brain to science, calling it the one gift that he can give back to the world.
Damn. Yikes.
Pretty much saying, you're so messed up that you need to be researched in there.
Well, I'm glad he had that opinion.
He's still incarcerated now. He's in a maximum security prison in Pennsylvania, SCI Phoenix.
That's crazy. That's one scary dude.
Yes, it's very scary. It would be scary even being in jail with that guy.
Yeah, because it doesn't, like, this. I feel like there's just no process of, like, anything. Like, any emotion, any feeling, any logic, any, you know.
No. Yeah, very cold. And the pictures of him online, he just looks, like, dead behind the eyes. Like, there's just nothing.
Yeah, I bet. There. I know. I was just, like, going to try to picture, like, what I think this guy would look like.
But yeah, that's my find for Pennsylvania. Much different than your find.
Yeah. But that was, I mean, that was good, though. That was, I feel like that one was a little bit different than some of the ones you hear. Like, just blind
watch
rage.
Out for everyone.
Yeah. Right. But I'm glad I'm glad at least that they caught him and he can't do that to anybody else.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Off the streets. But yeah, that's all I have. Oh, do you have a fun fact?
I do have a fun fact. All right.
What is it?
All right. Okay, so this one's about animals too.
Oh.
So, octopuses have three hearts, two plump. Oh my god, I'm so bad at this. pump blood to the gills, while the third pumps to the rest of the body. When they swim, the heart that pumps blood to the rest of the body actually stops beating. So that's why they prefer to, like, crawl around over swimming to conserve energy. Isn't that wild?
Ah. Yeah, that is cool.
And one just, it's like, oh, not gonna work.
It's crazy. They need that much for the gills. Like, two right, I wonder, hearts for the gills.
I wonder, like, how, like, you know, like, our heart size compared to our bodies and, like, their heart size. I can't remember think of the word for that. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if it's, like, if a person had three hearts, like, that's how much they need to get around.
Right, good point. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't think of it like that. Octopus are such strange animals. They're, like, the coolest animal. I don't know if they're considered animal, but they, just the way they can, like, fit into anything, and it seems like they can really think about stuff, and...
Yeah, no, I agree.
Like, I've heard that they try and escape all the time from when they're in aquariums, and...
Like an open jar.
Yeah. Pretty amazing. Alright. Well, I guess that's all. So, for the next couple, I think I'm going to be covering Alaska. Alaska is what I chose as my state.
Alaska and... And then I picked Michigan, so...
Michigan will be a good one, I feel like.
Yeah.
Alaska might be tough.
It might be, but I feel like I've listened to a good amount of things from there.
Yeah.
People can look forward to hearing some stories about Alaska and Michigan.
Yeah. And if anyone out there has any news headlines or anything to share about either of those states or anything in general, you can always DM us at whathaveyoudonepod on Instagram. Or shoot us an email at whathaveyoudonepod@gmail.com.
I'm glad you remember to say that, because I never do.
I know. Reach out however you want.
Please.
Yeah. And you can always rate us on wherever you listen to the podcast as well. That'd be great. Well, it's talking to you.
You too. We will see you next month.
Bye.
Bye.